Welcome back to Binary Jazz, the show that is just like Balderdash, except it's not. I am Chris, Jazz Sequence on the Internet. That's Jazz Sequence with a 3. I am most...
Wait. It's a silent 3 between the words? Where does the 3 fall?
The 3 is in the sequence.
The first E or the second E?
The first E.
Or in place of another letter?
In place of an E. It's the first E.
Okay. I didn't mean to derail you. I just didn't realize there was a 3 in there.
Totally. Well, I mean, it depends on the platform. I started off as Jazz Threequence. I mean, Jazz Sequence with a 3. And then as I joined other things later, I started just defaulting to Jazz Sequence because my domain is Jazz Sequence. And I actually had somebody say that they were confused about my email address because they assumed that my email address had a 3 in it because that was my Twitter handle. And so then I had to go out and purchase Jazz Sequence with a 3 and have it direct to Jazz Sequence without a 3. It's very confusing. I am most recently the proud possessor of a DDoS threat email, ransom email, that if I don't pay 0.02 Bitcoin by 8 p.m. tonight, then one of my sites is going to get DDoSed.
What is 0.02 Bitcoin in real currency?
It's like 100 and like, change. It's like 120 bucks or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay it.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't pay it if it was a nickel, but...
I mean, I wouldn't pay it anyway. I would pay it if it was a nickel. Yeah. I'm joined... go ahead.
Do you have some kind of like load balancing? Are you using Cloudflare?
I have Cloudflare. And actually, one of the dudes at Cloudflare, probably because I mentioned them in my tweet, jumped on Twitter and asked me to email him the ransom email just so he could look at it. And he's like, yeah, that's bullshit. I'm like, I know. I'm joined as always by Gary, who is Binary Gary on the internet. And he is a valued customer. I'm also joined by Allison, yes, who is Allison Plus on the internet, and she's a valued customer.
Oh, man. Chris, valued customer, good to see you.
Also, I like to think that that the podcast is really what brought you to the forefront to be ransomed, you know? Like, I think the popularity levels are so high that you just, you know, that's like the tallest blade of grass is the one that gets cut.
Yeah. I will continue to believe that.
I feel as though if our domain were to be ransomed, binaryjazz.us, where you can ask questions as a listener.
Good plug there.
Right? It only took 10,000 episodes or so, but I'm starting to feel like a momentum, a groove, like some ownership of this portion of the vessel, as it were. I feel as though if we were being held ransom for a DDoS, we would probably want it to happen just for the sheer nerd aspect of, like, what does it look like from a load perspective? And, you know, I'd be curious.
Yeah, that domain's actually on DigitalOcean. So if it did happen, I mean, DigitalOcean has some really nice tools to visualize the CPU load and all that sort of stuff. So if it did actually happen, you know, like, it would be something that could be looked at. But I imagine the Cloudflare thing in between is probably going to do something.
Effective. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Although, I suppose if you had your wits about you, you could figure out the IP address of the server and just go straight at that and hit the other, you know, 12 sites that run on the same droplet. Cause all sorts of mayhem on the internet for the dozens of...
What was interesting about the email...
Actively surfing those sites.
What was interesting about the email is it was sent by anonymous@anonymous.com.
But who are they?
Well, and they said, we are anonymous hacker collective or hacking group or something. And I'm like, uh-huh. Yes, sure you are. And what's funny is that anonymous.com redirects to anonymous media research, which is just a really boring media research company that when you go to anonymous.com, it takes you to their website. And I considered momentarily that the website was just a shell because it was so just nondescript and boring. But no, I actually think it's, I think that's probably an insult to the people who work there because I think it probably is real. And I feel very bad for saying their site was kind of boring and nondescript, but I don't know. Maybe if your name is anonymous, then that's the point of your website.
Knowing how the internet works, I was going to say, well, we can live without fear that they will, they will hear this podcast because they will not. But how the internet functions, I feel that there's a very good likelihood that they will now hear this podcast.
Yeah.
At least this episode.
What's funny is that the email said, if you go to the media to try to publicize this and make a quick buck or something, then you will be DDoSed immediately. And so of course, the first thing I do is post it on Twitter. And then I'm like, so is Twitter the media?
I don't know.
Is this podcast the media?
Twitter.
I am the media. I know.
I think we could be considered media.
We're talking about it. And we're broadcasting. And
I think this will just make your evening that much more interesting.
Well, and it's right. It's the night before I go on a 14-hour drive, so I won't get to see what happens tomorrow.
Maybe your site will be down for a little bit.
Oh, well.
All those gifts.
All those gifts. Yeah. It would be a shame if the gifts were gone.
Oh, you got to protect them.
Whoa, wait. Oops. A lot of buttons on this thing. All right. Retweet. Do not retweet. And publicize this.
I do have to comment.
Please.
Like normal, Gary's backdrop for people who do happen to check the video feed almost looks fake and picturesque, like a weird painting is behind you. Mm,
yes, like a diptych because it's divided in two.
Yeah.
It is. I'm in the garage and this is just a screen I pull down.
I would believe it, except I'm sure at some point those clouds will move, maybe.
I don't know. We'll have to see. Maybe we can watch the video in
full down screen.
Maybe Gary Club watch 2018.
Yeah.
So if you're new to the show, we come on and we talk about some stuff that Gary and I know nothing about or don't know at least the topic ahead of time. Allison will bring us a topic and we will attempt to describe and identify and discuss said topic without previously knowing what it is and possibly not even knowing what it is after we know what the topic is, know anything about the topic, and then we just make shit up because if we don't know what it is, then we just, that's what we do. So
Dyson Sphere part two.
Nope.
Best of.
Well, it was best of. It was all worst. Worst.
Worst. Sorry.
I tried to tee that up and it was all, the timing was terrible. Pretend it was a good joke about like sausage.
There's a sausage pun in there. Yeah, we've been over this.
I never saw such a terrible joke. Well, I'm satisfied.
Oh. Okay. The topic this week is Bildungsroman.
Excuse me?
It's spelled B-I-L. D-U-N-G-S-R-O-M-A-N, Bildungsroman. Yeah.
Is this the thing
it's
where...
It's not even in English. How am I supposed to know
Esperanto
what that is?
Esperanto wasn't either, but that didn't stop us.
You can break this down into its parts, I think, in true binary jazz fashion.
Say it one more time. Bildungsroman. Constructing is the building portion, right?
I do enjoy a good deep sigh. That's a sign that I've done my job well.
This isn't that thing the Mormons do, right? When they
I would like to hear the rest of that question.
Yeah, what is the thing the Mormons do?
There's many things.
The Mormons do, like, when they go out and sow their wild oats. What's that called?
Sow their wild oats?
What the Amish do.
Yep, I am. I totally am, not the Mormons. Yep, totally missed there. Wrong ballpark. My apologies for all our Mormon listeners.
I mean, yeah. If there are Mormon listeners, I'll just keep that thought in my head.
Well, my apologies to our Amish listeners.
Yes. Well, if they're Amish, I don't know that they'd be listening anyway.
If
they're on their buildings running, they might be.
Yeah. Right.
It's true. What is that called, though? It's something similar, right? It's two bisyllabic words in German, is it not?
Yeah.
It's almost the same damn thing, then. I mean, there's virtually no difference.
You're thinking Rumspringa.
Yeah, not even the right amount of syllables.
No. Yep.
No. Well, all right, I'm totally out of ideas on this.
It has nothing to do with buildings, I know that.
Well, I think buildings in German means like to make, right? Is it even German? Can we get? Is it really actually German?
It's like a spelling bee where you're like, may I have the origin of the?
Yes. Can you please use the word in a sentence?
My building's ramen. Yeah, that
I'm so
was.
Glad that's what
you walked about. Into that.
Yeah.
I
oh look at the clouds. They have moved. They have indeed moved.
They have moved.
The clouds
there
have moved.
You go. Good, yeah. good distraction, Gary.
Good clouds.
All the German I know comes from Einstein and Neubauten, which is a German experimental.
Well, that certainly
explains. Which is a German experimental band in the 80s and early 90s, and their name means collapsing new buildings. So I know that it does not mean that building is not part of the building's ramen.
Building is not equivalent
because
to building.
Bauten is building because Neubauten.
I like this detective work, this narrowing down. You're like, it's not building.
It's not that.
Well, I have a confession.
Yes.
I took 4 semesters of German in high school.
And
I have no idea
obviously
what
that
means any
obviously that helped you a lot, Gary.
Well, you had to have foreign language credits to graduate. So everybody took Spanish, except for the Greek students who took Greek because it was easy. And then the really like smart students all took Latin, which left German and French as languages you could take, but only if enough students enrolled. I don't think enough enrolled in French for a French class. But somehow enough enrolled in German. And it was like every semester, it was the same like 14 students. It was the weirdest class because I had all these different classes, but German, it was the same 14 students because really, I mean, it wasn't like it was a popular language. And I don't know, Spanish just seemed like, it's kind of boring. I don't know, but I know more Spanish now than German. Not saying a lot.
Yeah, I took Italian in high school for 4 years, and I went to Italy.
4 years, wow.
4 years, yeah, all 4. And I went to Italy for a couple weeks during that period of time. And so when I went to Italy a couple months ago, many moons ago, for a company retreat, I did know some Italian. I was able to communicate, and that was actually surprising. And actually, I picked up more as things, and I tried to speak it as much as I could, but I'm sure came off as an American speaking Italian, but better an American speaking Italian than a dipshit who doesn't speak anything.
Who doesn't even make the attempt.
Yeah.
We had Frau Cosnow my first 2 semesters, and she, I don't know why she was teaching high school, because I mean, she was also teaching at the local community college, but I mean, very clearly, like, not only multilingual, I don't know any language she spoke, but a good educator, but couldn't really handle, like, rowdy high school kids. So after a year, she said, to hell with this in German. And left. And then we got Herr Lugenbuhl, who was like the quintessential German-looking dude. I mean, like, he would shave in the morning, and by the time he got to school at 7:30, he would have, like, a 5 o'clock shadow. I mean, he was just so German.
That's a German
and he was great. I don't know.
I realized that was a German trait.
I feel like it made him feel more German, though. Like, he had, like, 5 o'clock shadow on his very German jowl. Everything about him was German. He felt just so authentic. He was from Switzerland. But he really was.
Well, probably from, like, Kansas.
No, I'm fairly certain it's Switzerland.
Making a go of it.
Yeah. But he was wonderful, and actually sort of knew how to deal with students. And then had, like, a massive heart attack, and we had, like, a substitute teacher that knew no German for a while, until Herr Lugenbuhl came back. I don't blame any of my deficiencies in German on either of those teachers or his heart attack. I was just a lazy student. It was my first class of the day every semester for a while. You know, whatever. I wish him well.
My Italian teacher was very, very Italian. Very, very Italian. Signor Mara. Except I can't roll my R's. I still can't roll my R's. I've never been able to roll R's. Ever. Mm. But that's his name. It's Signor Mara with a rolled R in there that I can't do.
Say the word again?
My word or the...
Yeah, your word. No. The topic today.
Bildungsroman.
I mean, it sounds like Roman buildings.
League, is it?
No, it's Bundesliga.
Okay. It's close.
There's lots of, like, good little trails happening linguistically.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, to be honest. So that could be... I could be throwing you off the scent.
I don't think that would be the way of throwing us off the scent. I don't think the pronunciation is a problem here.
I'm like, my pronunciation is what's throwing you off. Sorry.
As soon as you explain it, we'll be like, oh, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
The Dungs Roman.
I was
going to
say that today, but I forgot. Still. Yeah. I forgot that was my shtick. I was supposed to go, oh, yeah, that's, and then
that's. Well.
You could still, but. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And then Rumspringa.
Yeah, that's totally... That's that thing the not-Mormon Amish do.
The not-Mormon
I do. I like the idea of taking, like, a weird hiatus from life, though. Like, I mean, obviously, in their culture, it serves a much different purpose, but everybody should have the opportunity to Rumspringa a bit.
I feel like I'm, like, permanently doing that.
I'd watch that movie. Instead of Gary on vacation, just Gary on Rumspringa.
It's like Groundhog's Day, except not. Yeah. Except the opposite. Well, like, it's not like a torturous thing. It's like a...
It's pretty awesome.
Enjoyable. Yeah. Every day is the same, but it's nothing at the same time.
Yeah. Every day is a new thing. So, you, like, I mean, it's the same day, but, like, you do a different thing. Like, today I'm going to go climb the Eiffel Tower. And you fly to Paris and you climb the Eiffel Tower. Okay, you wake up again. And today I'm going to, you know, hike up the Alps. And so you go to hike up the Alps. And next morning you wake up.
I don't know. I even feel like just the mundane things that are different every day are really interesting. Like, here's a story that I think everyone would find boring. But I'm going to tell it anyway. And Allison won't drop from the call because so we're not going to lose all of our listeners. So, yeah, here's the deal. So I had... I've had these glasses for a while, and the nose piece, like, broke in half. So as I put it on, it snapped, and then it hurt to wear them. So I went to, like, an old pair of glasses, and they had a lot of problems with glare and stuff. So I thought, well, I should replace the nose piece. I don't need to buy new glasses yet. So I took my son, we went to Walgreens, and I found the glasses repair kit. But they didn't have replacement nose pieces. They just had, like, a screwdriver and some screws and crap. So I bought a pair of readers that had very similar nose pieces. Or at least the one I could match, because the other one had taken off. Or fallen, like, broken apart. I like MacGyvered, like, replacement nose pads, and it was super mundane. But he was like, well, how are we going to fix it? You know, you get, like, a cheap pair of readers and, you know, harvest the parts off of there.
It
was a great afternoon.
And that is Bildungsroman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of MacGyvering and a bit of
Is it the story itself, or the act of MacGyvering? It's the celebration
of mundanity.
Oh.
So here's another example.
What an exciting word for a Nazi.
I don't know. It doesn't seem that exciting.
Bildungsroman.
Yeah, I keep forgetting it, but maybe it's the German. And I was just so trained in 4 semesters of high school to not remember German words. Like, so.
That's the exact opposite effect that school is supposed to have. Well, depending on who you ask, I guess.
So there was this.
I might argue that is the specific effect that school actually.
We live in the power line. Like power lines are right behind us. So yesterday they were out there mowing the power lines, and the kids were excited. They're in the backyard watching. Because we're in Florida, it's not like we see a lot of tractors. So out in the West, where you drive past farmland, I mean, I can't think of any farmland people can. I mean, there must be some, but so they were out there watching the tractor go by mowing the lawn. It makes, I don't know, dozens of passes. And this guy, like, comes to the edge of the yard and stops. And he tells the kids to go ask their mom if they can ride in the tractor. So he took them for, like, a mile, like, down and back in the tractor. Tell them what was going on and show them all about it and stuff. It was fantastic. Well, then at night, they leave the tractors parked somewhere. So they don't even know the road. We'll mess with them. So he came back and parallel parked the tractor right up there so the kids could wander around and poke at it. Like, it's just a tractor. But it was so much fun to go out there with the kids and, like, you know, stand next to the tires that are taller than they are. And, you know, why are there chains hanging in front of the mower blades? And, you know, like, it's mundane. It's a tractor. For many people, it's a common thing. But, you know, there it was. And super fun and exciting. 24 hours later, I'm talking about a tractor for crying out loud.
There's a couple sort of living farms around Utah Valley and the Salt Lake Valley. And one of them that we've been to a couple times, they, you know, have tractors you can climb on. They've got animals that you can visit and feed, and they feed, and it's a farm, but it's also sort of like an amusement park. I mean, not like an amusement park, like there's no rides, but like you go hang out with animals on the farm and there they are. And they actually do, like, I think there's a couple times, like at a particular time during the day, they might like actually churn butter and do other thing, other farmy type
things. The animals churn the butter?
No, the humans.
Oh, okay.
It's not the Georgia
Orwell. I'm not totally disappointed. I'm a little disappointed. I was thinking, like,
there's also
up there.
There's also, this is the place. I think this is the place Park, it's called. I haven't been there. The kids have been there a couple times, and they have a blacksmith shop there, and they actually do blacksmithy things. And go there, and they've got a freaking, I don't know, do blacksmithy things. Like, yeah, making horseshoes and whatever. And you can
stayed at a state park in Georgia last year. I only know it because the name is cool. It's called General Coffee.
General Coffee?
They had animals and stuff there, but that's not notable. The notable is General Coffee.
That's what was notable.
Your
definition of notable versus mundane is fascinating to me.
I see them as very far apart.
Are they?
You know? No, they're not. They're pretty, I mean, on the continuum of things in the world.
I love that I go horizontal with my hand and you go vertical. I don't know.
I think we should get the definition partially because we have a really good question too, and I want to make sure that we have enough time to discuss this really good question.
Okay.
So I do have a sort of word and ulterior motive. That's the word for wanting to do that. But also we should actually, you know, discuss the actual thing that it is before we get on to the really good question.
Okay, so Bildungsroman is a coming of age story. It's a literary term for English lit fans. So things like Catcher in the Rye or...
So that's what it is. It is a coming of age story, period. That is what it is. That is the description. So instead of saying coming of age story, it's a Bildungsroman.
Yeah, because yeah, pretty much.
So when an Amish person,
Bildung means education, and Roman means novel.
Okay.
So when an Amish person goes on their Bundesliga,
like the protagonist goes on a journey of knowledge in which they increase that knowledge as the novel continues.
German?
German. Totally German.
Well, we got that part right.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been Dutch, and I wouldn't have known.
Right. I was a little worried that was going to be the case after I talked a lot about my German class, and it wasn't going to be a German word.
It's archetypal German. It can't get more German than this. It's like, well,
it's actually Japanese.
Actually, it's Icelandic.
Oh. Crap.
And obviously, like, a lot of novels fall into this category because.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why is that a.
What is. Is there a difference? So, okay, is there a difference between that kind of story and the Joseph Campbell hero's journey sort of thing? Or is the hero's journey a type of Bildungsroman?
I think the hero's journey would fall into that, and there's probably like some sort of weird sub-niche or category. Because I know there's a separate term for the artist's journey, which is Kunstelroman. So I'm sure that there's like a niche for everything in this world.
is the relatability of those stories what makes them popular? Like, well, I guess they're not all popular, but is the relatability why that is like a continued writing theme?
I would think so.
And like the catharsis of actually getting your version of it on paper.
Well, and like the hope for improvement that someone can actually like journey through and keep growing versus just be a stagnant character. And also like the idea that like everything revolves around the one protagonist. So the events and other characters like serve that person's growth, right?
A story in which the main character never changes and stays the same is less interesting than a story where you can see the main character evolving over time. Mm-hmm. At least that's the common perception among writers.
And readers.
And readers.
I wouldn't want to read a book where the character is just static.
Because at the end of the book, you're going to be yelling at them like, dude, don't you ever learn? You never open that door.
God. And also, I guess the other thing is that
five times you've opened the door and a giant octopus ate your brain and you haven't learned.
You never understand. The octopus will always be behind the door.
But also, what's like, the octopus a metaphor?
Like, like the timeline of like youth to like aged.
Yeah.
Aged.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean elderly, just older.
Enhanced
version of yourself.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, so this really good question comes from Lisa. She sent it a while ago. And the reason why I wanted to give it time is because I actually had to Google the thing she was talking about in order to have an understanding of the question itself. So the question is, what gentrified food offends your sensibilities, and what gentrified food can you get down on? And so first, I needed to look into what the hell is gentrified food, or gentrification as it relates to food. So gentrification typically is a term that is used to describe like the evolution of a neighborhood. Like there's a poor neighborhood, or typically historically poor neighborhood, and then like young millennials come in and they move in and they start building stuff, and suddenly that neighborhood becomes really trendy and popular, and it kicks out all of the low income people because they can no longer afford to live in this neighborhood that was historically low income. And this basically happened in the market in San Francisco, I know, and the Castro is like that. Things like that where like the gays came in and they made everything awesome, and now nobody can live there anymore. And so when it applies to food, from what I have read, it's basically taking some sort of like either cultural specific specific food to a particular culture, or like maybe even like a vegetable that nobody really eats, like kale, and then wow. it becomes wow. like super trendy, and then like because everybody's like, oh, kale, time I'm gonna put that in my smoothie.
Let me stop you right there.
Kale. Gary, don't you dare. Kale is amazing.
I'm about to badmouth some kale. Kale is spinach with better PR. That's all it is. Kale is spinach with better marketing. It's other way, it is subservient to spinach.
Is the marketing really better? Is it better, Gary?
Or is it because people have like gotten sick off of spinach, so maybe their PR needs to do a bit more work?
People have gotten sick off of kale. Kale used to be used as a decoration in the salad trough, for crying out loud.
The garnish.
And someone was like, "We can sell that, and people will eat it."
It's because it's delicious.
So
it's not. It's spinach is better in every way.
So back to food gentrification, although this does sort of cross over into that, one of the big sort of culprits of the gentrification and the making trendy of not particularly trendy foods is Whole Foods. You go into Whole
Ping
Foods.
Ping pong death match, kale and spinach. That's what I want. Go ahead, Whole Foods.
So you walk into Whole Foods and like everything is marked up 1,000,000%. And it's all the same food that you get elsewhere. It's just like because it's Whole Foods and it's natural and organic and whatever. And so
Whole Foods is on Amazon bar, right?
Yes.
I think it's only like 500,000% at this point.
But like if in my neighborhood a gentrified food could be something totally different than in your neighborhood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with like a real clear baseline. Like Chinese food, like American Chinese mm-hmm. food is very clearly gentrified food.
Yeah.
I mean, there are Chinese places where you get Chinese food.
One of the things I was reading is referring to food as ethnic. And I'm totally guilty of this. And I hadn't even thought about like the cultural implications of thinking of food as ethnic foods and like how that, because basically any food that's not from America is an ethnic food. It has an ethnicity. Like German food is ethnic food. Italian food is ethnic food, but we don't think of it as ethnic food. We think of ethnic food as like Asian.
Eastern mostly. Yeah.
Yeah. And that in itself is very, word.
Problematic?
Yes. That's not the word I was thinking of, but yes. I mean, in short, yes, it is problematic to think of. It's a colonialist to be thinking of essentially groups of people as ethnic.
Yeah.
Well, I want to back up to the food types.
Yes. The kale. I want to back up to kale.
I'm not done talking about kale, and I probably never will be. And that might be what's on my headstone, right?
Kale.
Spinach greater than sign kale. That's it. What is he remembered for? Hatred of kale, love of spinach.
Hatred of kale, lover of spinach.
I got sidetracked there. Like Italian foods are ones that we've like really like. Italian very Americanized, right? Chinese very Americanized. I feel like Japanese food has become very Americanized. Obviously, like California roll sushi. They're probably not doing a lot of California roll in Japan, I would guess.
But I think Americanized is different than gentrified. Or I think there's like different levels. Because I think one is like making it palatable to a larger population. Mm-hmm. And one is like then taking it maybe to another level and like co-opting it.
Yes, but then selling it as, for instance, Japanese food,
like,
is sort of like cultural appropriation, right? Like, it is an American version of Japanese food, but we're telling you it's Japanese food. And so it creates a sort of like expectation that if I went to Japan, I'd get exactly this stuff because this is Japanese food.
Yeah.
Which is very much not the case.
So repeat the question, because I don't think we've answered the question.
So the question is, what gentrified food offends your sensibilities, and what gentrified food can you get down on?
Okay. Mm.
I don't know.
That there's a lot of assumption there that
we like
non-gentrified food. Like non-gentrified versions of different cuisine, right?
Right. Yes.
I thought there's a lot of cases. Like Italian's a good example. I have not eaten in Italy. I've eaten a lot of Italian in the U.S., and a lot of it is very clearly like there's some pasta and some red sauce and a shitload of cheese. Right. That's.
I mean, to be honest, actual Italian food is pretty similar without like the layer upon layer upon layer of cheese.
Yeah.
We do a little bit more on the cheese side on this side of the Atlantic than they do over there. That's more or less, it's pretty much the same stuff anyway. Pasta is pasta.
So Chinese is one that I can totally get down on. Having eaten Chinese food in China, this texture is very big and like weird. I can't say weird. Textures that to me are weird. Are
interesting.
Like, I would not. I mean, yeah, like a much wider gamut in expectations of texture. You know, I feel like I'm cool with a lot of textures, probably more so than most folks in food. But my expectations and tolerance of textures is nowhere near as broad as someone who's grown up on like local Chinese fare.
So. I would say that I can, I'm down with gentrified Indian food, because I feel like if I had authentic Indian food, it would probably make my head blow off of my neck. And I'm basing this on the fact that Aaron actually went to India and had actual food and was like nahi masala, like all the time, and it was still really hot. So.
Oh, I don't know.
But I mean, it's also like it's outside of the realm of like specifically like what you're calling categories of food, cultural foods that have been brought over. Like there's also like things like kale or I don't know. There's a thing I was reading about chard, about how chard is making a comeback. Like I didn't know that chard was
I didn't know it had left.
Exactly. And that's sort of the point is like anything can be anything that you suddenly like the avocado toast thing. Like I didn't know it was a thing before. I didn't know that it was now a thing now. I don't know why people are excited about avocado toast. It's avocado on toast. I mean, avocados are awesome. They never were not awesome, toast. Really.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. What does a toast add? The toast is not the star of this dish, clearly.
My gentrified food that I can get down with is jackfruit.
Wow.
I'm not sure I agree with you. I see your jackfruit, but I'm not sure I can agree with you. I'm not sure that I'm totally down with it.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
We a vegan option at WordCamp Jack's last year, 2017. It's barbecue jackfruit.
Yeah, that's what we had at WordCamp Salt Lake.
Yeah.
It was
you're all making as well as I would have liked. Your WordCamps.
it was not received as well as I would have hoped.
It was actually it shouldn't have received pretty well. Yeah, it shouldn't have received pretty well at ours. The thing about jackfruit, the thing about the jackfruit that we had at WordCamp Salt Lake City anyway, is it doesn't make particularly fantastic leftovers. And when I'm the one that's taking all the leftovers home, day 2, 3, 4, yeah, it starts to be like, okay, I'm done with this now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shelf life is pretty short.
Yeah.
Bulk jackfruit, not a good thing.
This was a fun question.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm still ruminating on it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we could do an entire episode on this. So thank you for the question, Lisa. I hope that we answered to your satisfaction. If we have not, please ask again, and we'll attempt to answer it again. And if you think that it should be the topic for an entire episode, include that as well. Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at @binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the forum on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.